you in the 06010.
We are back in Fantasy Focus. Football is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways you could save. It's March 9th. We've got a full boat there, and I mean a full boat. We are back in the old stomping grounds, which I know we said that the last show and the show before that, but it's a good reminder because, A, not everybody listens to every offseason
That's
show,
right.
And
yep.
B, we haven't had this full four-person crew here in what would you call this now? A radio studio?
Like, yeah. Really,
not that many radio shows here, are there?
No, but I think it was, well, we'd still call this a radio studio.
It is a radio
now.
Studio. It just has Greeny's background
yeah,
here.
Exactly. Greeny
has lived in New York for like 7 years now. So apparently the decor is a bit outdated. I'm Field. He's Daniel. She's Stefania. Hello there. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back. I feel like I've been on the road. I think I was in Connecticut for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, wow. The best 2 months,
yeah, seriously.
So. And Mike Clay, hello, my friend.
I'm good. I feel like the air's a little different.
I
feel like
you have a little bit of bounce, a little bit
yeah,
of step.
Feeling like a champion. I don't know about you, Dan. You feel like
a
champion?
I do. In spite of my actions, I feel like a champion. Mike, what are you alluding to when you say all of this?
I'm alluding to our ESPN Bowling League Championship, which we won just a few days ago. We're recording this on Thursday. This was Tuesday night, and our Pins Above replacement team, which features myself, Daniel Dopp, Kyle Soppy, and David Presley, our producer. And we went into the 7th seed in the playoffs at 8 teams.
7th seed?
The 7th seed.
That's right.
And wow, you
pulled
guys
off
were
three,
sneaky.
With 3 straight upsets, right?
Three straight upsets
and won the whole thing.
Right, couple,
it sounds
couple,
like
couple,
they
the
need to, okay, first of all, sounds like they need to readjust their rankings.
Yeah.
Also,
wow.
You guys have a ringer in David Presley, who's not even here to talk about his bowling
yeah.
prowess.
Yes.
A couple questions here. At what point did you guys start to believe that you really could win the championship?
Like, as
was it
soon
after
as,
the first upset?
Yeah, as soon as we didn't have DJ Gallo and David Presley join the team, that's sort of when I... Which
when
is,
DJ was out and replaced
yeah,
by...
Yeah, exactly, replaced by David.
Or DJ. He's not here. He's just catching straight.
Which is so not his fault. I love DJ Gallo. Yeah, but...
I mean, look, I think we kind of peaked at the right time, right? We went into the playoffs thinking we just... Basically, the idea with bowling is you get your handicap right, so you just have to outperform yourself. You just have to keep getting better as the season goes on. And that's how you can win come playoff time. And that's what we did, right?
Yeah,
we
but the thing about it, Mike, is like you're saying like you have a handicap. Didn't you roll like a 277 at one point?
I had a 266 in the playoffs, but that was like I improved as the year went on.
He wasn't very good.
He's
a case in point of peaking at the right time.
Yeah. Unless you're like facing off against Pete Weber. That's like a totally awesome score no matter what your handicap
yeah,
is.
Yeah, just so. One of those days. So we just came together at the right time and we crushed it.
Did you guys celebrate in style?
Who do you think you are?
I am.
You
we did not do that. We had a couple turkey dances.
We did.
That's about it. We got a trophy.
Yeah. Too bad this isn't on video or I would make you do that right now.
You can check it out.
Daniel's really good at that.
At Fantasy Focus, there are a few pictures up of us being able with the trophy that we got. It's actually really exciting. This league has been around since 1999. So it's been like,
99.
Which you would have never guessed it. Yeah, but this is like a deep running ESPN bowling league. So we're really pumped, excited to be able to get the trophy because we're going to be able to have it live here in the Focus studio throughout the entire season.
So that everyone can be reminded.
It's like if you think about the things that could happen in your life, this championship or the Lions winning the Super Bowl, what would be more consequential to you?
It's tough because I was physically a part of this one right here, but...
You were the leader of the team.
I mean, it's not too late to potentially...
I don't know about that.
You were a top four player on our team.
How dare you, Mike Clay.
Yeah. I think Daniel was representing the Lions.
Wow!
During the playoffs,
now,
I mean,
that's... What is this all about?
I mean, we made the playoffs, so that would not be representation.
The best part is I actually played poorly. I played all right last week. This week, I played poorly. But we're going into a singles tournament next week. So it was like I brought my average down one last time going into what's going to be a good final week.
That's right. You're all about yourself, right?
Well,
the player,
Mike Clay.
You're just thinking about
the inspiration. He's the Dan Campbell.
I try to be.
But it was a fun long season. It's been going on since the football season, early on in the football season, and it's over.
Bowling does make me think of football in this way. So growing up, obviously, many of us watched various things before the games began on Sunday mornings. But I think back to like my nostalgic moments are Sunday NFL Countdown with Boomer and TJ and the entire crew, right? And so I used to, you know, maybe have breakfast there while watching Sunday NFL Countdown, and then you leave the breakfast table to go do something different, and you come back later for lunch, and you turn the TV on, and it's still on ESPN, Sunday at like, you know, 1:15 yes. and is bowling.
Yeah, yeah, of course it is.
Like, you know, it's like the one thing that ESPN's like, all right, yeah, we have the rights there. They're probably like, you know, like if you're going to watch bowling, you're going to watch bowling no matter what, mm-hmm. right? But we're not going to put like a premium basketball game opposite, you know, like whatever, Buccaneers, Chiefs, you know, with Brady and Mahomes. Right, so we're going to like play things smart. So I always think about bowling when I think about football. Enough of that, I think, maybe.
No, enough of that. Let's move on.
So let's get to some news.
They're still working on logistics for the parade, so we'll get back to that. We don't have those details yet, but obviously the town, the
we'll
city is working on that.
We will share them as we get them.
I'm pretty proud of
this. Yeah.
Of course I am. We earned it. I mean,
we're going to go to like the Southington St. Patrick's Day parade next week and be like, this is for us, people. You know,
it's got like a float. They got their own float.
I will say this. Like David Presley was the most consistent of our bowlers, but Mike, going from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, probably raised his average the most. And that
is Justin Fields.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and when you're talking about against the handicap, that was literally what helped push us over the edge. So real talk, Mike Clay really did some good
stuff.
And shout
out to Brunswick, too. I don't know if we do it without
them. Yes, our buddies over at Brunswick sent us a bunch of stuff. It was great.
Shout out Brunswick, and too bad for the teams you beat. Not. All right, let's get to Lamar Jackson, and the news there is on Tuesday, the Ravens officially placed what's called the non-exclusive franchise tag, and the reason why we say that is there are two different types of franchise tags. The exclusive means that Lamar Jackson has no ability to negotiate with other teams. It also cost the Ravens about $13 million more. So the Ravens have a discounted price, but they have put themselves in potentially a bit of a vulnerable spot as Lamar can now negotiate with other teams. And here's how it works. This is going to be a lot of inside baseball throughout the show, so pay attention. Let's say the Atlanta Falcons, as an example, decided to change their mind to be in on Lamar Jackson because they have reportedly said they are not going to pursue Lamar. They could write an offer sheet for Lamar Jackson if he agrees to it. The Baltimore Ravens have 5 days from the moment it's agreed to decide to match it. And if they do match it, Lamar Jackson is obligated to play for the Baltimore Ravens on those exact same terms. So if it's 5 years, $200 million for Atlanta, it's 5 years, $200 million for Baltimore. He cannot change the contract once he agrees to it with a different team. Beyond that, If the Ravens had to decline this offer sheet, that would mean the Falcons would owe them 2 first-round picks. So you'd be paying not just the full freight of a contract, but also the full freight of those 2 first-round picks.
Those first round picks have to be from consecutive years, right? They couldn't be from a team that has 2 first-round picks this year. Just as I realize that's super inside baseball.
There's actually a bit of ambiguity in talking to various sources about this, Daniel. But I think the simplest way that it is supposed is that a team would have to have a first-round pick in this year's draft and next year's draft, and that the most likely outcome would be the team's own first-round pick this year and next.
And next, okay.
But you're right. People have asked, like, what if the Lions won it? Not that they would. What if the Lions won it? Or what if the Seahawks won it? They would not do it either. Or what about the Texans, right? Gray area there, so I'm going to stop short until we actually have to cross that bridge. It seems like there is a lot less interest than people probably forecasted for Lamar Jackson. But let's go around the table. Like, is there anybody that you would like specifically? Daniel, if there was a team, you'd be like, all right, I want Lamar to sign an offer sheet with this team, and I want the Ravens to decline this offer sheet. Is there a team that comes to mind, obviously, for you?
I really do think it's Atlanta for me. I just think it would be fun. And I know that a lot of people have said that. It's not like a new thing. But the idea for me, giving him a couple of weapons and Kyle Pitts and Drake London, being able to still have what I feel like is a run-first offense or an offense that is going to be able to focus on finding ways to be able to utilize him. I just think it would be fun for me to watch him play in Atlanta.
Tanya?
I'd like to see him go to the Raiders, but I know that is not realistic because they don't have the resources to bring in Lamar Jackson, but clearly they have a hole. They lost Derek Carr, but they didn't lose him. I mean, they voluntarily gave him up.
Sure.
He's now with the Saints, and they have this guy named Devontae Adams. I mean, he hasn't had a receiver like that to play alongside him. They've got a run game because they secured Josh Jacobs. I mean, it's really, to me, this is a fast-paced team. This is a great fit for him. But I already know it's not going to happen.
Mike?
I think the Jets make some sense, right? They're right down the road, and up the road.
They got a guy.
Yeah, they may have somebody in mind, but I mean, what we like for Aaron Rodgers, we could like for Lamar Jackson, which is having a guy like Garrett Wilson as your number one and having a good defense in place. I mean, that's a team that can certainly, we would all predict them to make the playoffs if Lamar Jackson goes there. That's the position they need to fill. So I think they're interesting for sure, but you know, I think we. I mean, you can touch on this. We expect him probably back in Baltimore, right? I mean,
My guess is that I think Lamar is going to wind up back in Baltimore. What I think becomes much less clear is, will there be a long-term deal? I don't think the answer is yes. Will he be there for the team in week one? Because in order to, and again, we're getting so into the weeds here,
but
right
this
now.
Is helpful. But this is Lamar, I think this is right? what people need to hear, the details.
You may recall this from Le'Veon Bell the year that he got franchise tag. He did not show up. He ended up bypassing the entire year, right? But if Lamar Jackson decides not to be with the Ravens at the beginning of the season, there is a certain date he'd have to show up by to accrue a season and basically move past year one of the tag. A player can only be tagged 3 total times in his career, but if Lamar dismisses the entire year, he's back to square one. He'll be back to year one of the tag. Mm-hmm. So it does behoove him to be there at some point this season. So while I do think that's the end game, I think Washington's the team that I keep coming back to.
That's a good one.
And for some of the reasons you've discussed with the Jets, very good defense. There are some complicating matters for the Commanders, not the least of which is that they are potentially up for sale. And
that's what I was going to ask about, because financially, how can you put together that kind of money when there's all these questions surrounding their financial status as it is?
Think about this, just hypothetically. If they were to sign Lamar Jackson to a contract that included a $75 million signing bonus, and Daniel Snyder is about to sell the team, he'd have to cut that check before he sells the team. Mm. Like, I mean, unless this team gets sold really fast from right now, right? Like, you think he just could? You know what? Like, whatever. I know that they're going to sell for an ungodly amount. That $75 million would feel like a drop in the bucket.
Well, who's going to just throw that away just because?
Right, exactly. Just like, yeah, you know what? As a parting gift to you. Like,
right.
And now
yeah,
everybody has said, hey, you know, it would be a legacy-altering move for Daniel Snyder. Go out on top, metaphorically, which I'm not sure that could ever go out on top.
Yeah. About that.
And I don't think it matters. I think if you look at this scenario, I think $75 million matters to him, because every dollar matters, and I don't think on principle he would do it.
So I agree with you, Safanian, which is why I think basically every team that we've brought up, it's like there's just as compelling a counterpoint as there is a point behind it. But I think Lamar ends up back in Baltimore. I will just say this, until we have a resolution, though, it'll be every year we have a story. It was Kirk Cousins' contract for a while. It was Dak Prescott's contract for a while. Colin Kaepernick and his being signed or not
Aaron
for a
Rodgers
while, right?
Last year.
Aaron Rodgers. We have a story every offseason that holds up the rest of the league until there's resolution.
I thought you were going to say we have an Aaron Rodgers story every offseason, because
including this one.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, let's take it right there, because we do have an Aaron Rodgers story.
That's right.
And by the time you're listening to this show, there's a chance that Aaron Rodgers is no longer a Green Bay Packer. As of this morning, we're doing this on Thursday. As of this morning, the Jets are feeling confident that they are going to land Aaron Rodgers. There's optimism, according to Diana Rossini. It seems very clear now that there are two teams Aaron Rodgers could play for next year, the Packers or the Jets, and nobody else. And, like, this is not like, you know, teams are just lurking because they're trying to be coy. Like,
that's
Aaron has to be just as interested in them as he is, as they are in him, and they've already had a meeting. So let's just play this out here for a second, because if he does get traded by, you know, whatever, tomorrow, and people are listening, let's just talk about the idea of Aaron Rodgers with the Jets. And Mike, this is not like, are the Jets going to win the Super Bowl? It's, would Aaron Rodgers' fantasy value resuscitate? Hypothetically, is Aaron Rodgers back to where he was prior to this season, in your estimation?
You know what? I think it's a team that's going to try to run a balanced offense, rely on that defense. And they do have Garrett Wilson, which I think almost is a better fit with Lamar Jackson, because we've seen him like just force feed to one player. There might not be a lot of balls to go around if he goes there.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, there will be a lot of balls to go around. There's potential for fantasy value there, but I still feel like they need more, right, for him. I mean, you're going to have eventually Breece Hall, obviously, once he's fully healthy. We'll see on that. But you have Garrett Wilson. Elijah Moore didn't really pan out last year. We'll see if he comes along. So I still think there's more to be learned, but there's no doubt about it. I mean, Garrett Wilson was already a wide receiver two as a rookie. He looks like the real deal. We're going to be upgrading him, and we'll probably rank him as a fringe wide receiver one if Rodgers lands there.
Which he might be there anyways, right? Because the Jets are going to find some sort of solution at quarterback if it's not Aaron Rodgers.
Who's
they're
the fallback?
Gonna,
who's next? Jimmy Garoppolo? Or
you know, there are
Jacoby
players like Jimmy
Brissett.
Garoppolo. I think Ryan Tannehill is a possible trade candidate for somebody. I it's a fair question to ask. Like, who? I don't know who, but I can tell you that Woody Johnson is not going to go into next season. That's their team owner with Zach Wilson as a starter. It's not going to happen. I mean, the team obviously would. I mean, it'd be Mike White before.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, don't disrespect
sure.
Mike White. I mean,
Well, I think there's a much healthier conversation about Aaron Rodgers and the Jets if it actually happens,
yeah.
because there are some things we don't know. You know, if this deal gets done, they're going to have to trade a lot, right? It's not going to be like Aaron Rodgers for a sixth-round pick or something. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Aaron Rodgers for, I would think, at least pick 13. But, like, if you're Green Bay, you're giving away Aaron Rodgers.
And
like,
don't they take a big cap hit?
It is a big, 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 big amount of money. For
this. I mean,
they're this
has got to be bad like feelings that. If this happens after everything they went through to put him back in a position where he would be happy to come to them last year.
It's safe to say that both sides feel ready to move on.
Yeah, I get that, but there's still got to be some bad feelings left over from this was negotiated based on what you wanted last year, and now all of a sudden...
Let me be clear.
You've made it so uncomfortable for us that...
Here's a fact of the matter. If Aaron Rodgers either retires or gets traded, he royally screwed the Packers over as far as like the terms of the contract.
Right.
Like maybe screwed over is the wrong word, but like... He completely owned them in that negotiation. This is what happens. Completely dominated them. Like, absolutely got exactly what's the old expression? You can't have your cake and eat it too. If he gets traded, he's about to have his cake and eat it too. Because the Packers are not totally screwed, but they're going to be in a heap of pain.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And if Jordan Love's really good, it might not matter. But who has any idea on that one? So, yes.
Right. It's still costly. I think it's interesting in how it'll be.
Right. I was going to say,
how it's going to leave his mark in Green Bay.
The Packers, I'm sure, are going to start by saying, hey, two first-round picks, or, like, you want to trade us a first-round pick? We want Elijah Moore, too.
Yeah,
as an example.
Yeah.
Right,
for
sure. Right,
good
right.
young
That's
pieces.
What I was thinking about, yeah.
Don't be surprised if, you know, the negotiations in this deal are just as complicated from what the Packers want as opposed to what the Jets are looking for in this Aaron Rodgers package. Mm-hmm.
And we saw that last year, by the way, with Russell Wilson, Noah Fant was in that deal. He was one of the better young tight ends in the league. Shelby Harris as well was a pretty
really
important defensive tackle for Seattle last year.
Totally.
So
Drew Locke, too. Don't forget
him. I forgot about him. Yeah.
Seattle.
Don't be surprised.
Cut to Seattle being like, we're okay with it now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Drew Locke is a free agent. Yeah. I can't wait to see what happens there. I think his market might be slightly better than people realize. Speaking of New York, Stefania, Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley are staying in New York. They beat the buzzer.
Yeah. Came down to the wire.
Daniel Jones,
I was on a plane.
Saquon Barkley franchise. Yeah.
Watching television.
Yeah.
Watching that because I was trying to put together something for our piece that came out today about all the free agency prospects and what to look for.
Yeah.
And injury concerns was... Not, what's the word I'm looking for? There weren't a lot of big name players just because this free agency market doesn't have a lot outside of the top running backs.
Yeah.
And the running backs that we were talking about all got franchise tagged because Tony Pollard, who clearly had a big injury, ended his season, staying with Dallas on the franchise tag. Josh Jacobs staying with the Raiders.
Yep.
Jacobs ended strong, but he has had injuries in the past. And then, of course, Saquon Barkley, who had a phenomenal season, couldn't be happier for him for the way this season went. But when you're thinking about a player in free agency, if he were going to be a free agent and potentially shopped around, even though we thought the Giants were going to keep him, if he was potentially going to be shopped around, people would be talking about that injury history of his because he's missed so much time and he's a running back, a position that is devalued, I believe, because of the injury risk. So that tag at the 11th hour just... spared me having to talk about that or write about it, but it also allowed him. I think they're in a good place, don't you? With the Giants, they're happy with what they got. He's there. He has expressed wanting to stay with the Giants. Yeah. It'll be curious to see what deal comes out of this. Sounds like they're working on something.
Yeah, I think he'll be in a good place once they get a deal done. I think he understands it's a business, but I think he would have been just fine if Daniel Jones got the tag.
Oh,
and Saquon had the chance to negotiate a long-term deal at some point between now and Wednesday. He just has less leverage, right? If the Giants don't like the terms of the deal, they can say, fine, we're going to pay you $10.9 million this year, and we'll do this again next offseason and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But
it feels like, I do think, just you know, from talking to him last year at training camp and sort of the perspective, I do think there's been a lot of learning that has happened. And I think if you look around, he looks around and you see some of the top running backs who got big contracts where then people have questioned about the wiseness of the contract, Ezekiel Elliott. And you look at if he was going into that, knowing the injury history he has, I'm sure he's smart enough to realize that a solid deal with the Giants might be his best option.
And I would add this to that conversation, Stefania. We all want the guys to get as much as they can.
Sure.
Saquon's one of those rare guys because of just how dynamic and electric he is and marketable he is. Being a New York Giant might mean more to Saquon Barkley's value than other teams. There are other players in that. Heck, his quarterback, Daniel Jones, obviously very, very rich. He won't have to worry about marketing money. Daniel Jones is not nearly as magnetic of a personality as Saquon Barkley is, right? Like, Saquon being a prominent figure in the biggest media market in the world has value, has real value. Mm-hmm. There's
and exciting
sponsorships
to watch
everywhere.
And
there's events. Mm-hmm. There's so much. He can make millions extra per year being on a Nike, or I think it might be Adidas, a billboard
right.
in Times Square, right? Like, that means something to him that, while there are wonderful places to play that aren't New York, right? Like, the reality is that if you're playing in Indianapolis, it's not the same sort of, you know, it's not the same kind of city media market as it is in New York. So.
Plus, there's something to be said, I think, too, for the stuff that is qualitative, right? You're on a team that's on a rise, yeah. The coach that has brought this team forward, and there's a lot of excitement and momentum behind that. Mm-hmm. And you, if you go to an uncertain spot, just because you get a few more, because it's not going to be a monstrosity in terms of difference, I don't think, in what he would get somewhere else.
I agree with you on that.
Can I ask one real quick question?
Sure.
And we don't really have it on our note, but Stefan, you mentioned Tony Pollard, and I think my buddy Kurt had mentioned this in one of our group chats. Don't the Cowboys have like almost $30 million in cap space tied up to two running backs? And
they
is
do.
That usually a good idea and how
Not
to construct
a good
team?
Idea. Yeah. It's $27 million right now for Tony Pollard and Zeke Elliott. It's Thursday, 1:25 Eastern time. I'd be surprised if by Thursday of next week, Zeke's contract still counts for $17 million.
What it is now.
But remember, though, Mike McCarthy is now going to be the play caller, and he wants to score less, okay? They want to run that's more right. and score less, less, settle for more field goals, and rest the defense. So, and that's, I'm not exaggerating. Like, that's what that essentially was.
I think Zeke, another one of those guys, by the way, this is another example of where I do think being a Dallas Cowboy has some real value to it, right? And Zeke Elliott's popularity is grander in Dallas than it would be if you were playing in, again, make up a different market that's not the Dallas Cowboys. With
Indy
the
is a great
star.
Example.
I love Indy so much. My people out there from Indy. We love you. We don't want you to think it's personal.
Not a slam on
Jacksonville,
Indy,
right? Name a smaller market than Dallas, right? It's just the way the world works.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com today or just stop by.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, so let's move to the Saints. They have signed Derek Carr, Daniel, and he had a bunch of suitors, but he ends up with New Orleans.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have been gravitating towards, hey, this is maybe the move that puts them at the front of the NFC South, but more importantly for right now, let's talk fantasy football. Derek Carr has never really reached fantasy football stardom. We thought the stars had aligned last year for that to happen. Does that mean that we are back to where we kind of always have been for Derek Carr? Nice bye week fill-in?
Kind of feels that way, right? I look at this team and everything that you just talked about with Derek Carr. Only one season over 4,200 passing yards, right? He's played for a while. Only one season with more than 30 passing touchdowns. And 30 is a fair amount, but like he just sort of lives in the middle, it feels like. You want to talk about 3,500, you know, maybe 4,000 passing yards with, you know, 25 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see him in this offense because there'll be more consistency for all of those skill position players, except for Taysom Hill. So I'm so sorry, Stefania. But other than that, I really am excited to be able to see him. Mm-hmm. I just don't expect, like you're saying, he's going to be a bye week fill-in for me. He's not going to be a guy that comes in that I'm targeting in drafts. He's looking for someone when I need a guy. I'm going to try and find him on the waiver wire.
More of a desperation bye week fill-in. He's not even that good at that, right?
He really isn't.
Check this out. I think this would shock a lot of people. He has finished 19th or worse in fantasy points per game a quarterback in 8 of his 9 seasons. That's terrible. He has 0 top 10s. He has never been a top 10 fantasy quarterback. But that being said, good news for Chris Olave. I think we're going to feel much better about these second-year quarterbacks with improved quarterback situations. That certainly applies to Chris Olave, who was terrific as a rookie. Yeah. It's all question marks behind him. We'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Thomas, it seems unlikely to be there. We'll see if they find a way to work that out.
He's shifting there a little bit.
Yeah, with the quarterback change.
Retaining him. But they've got some work to do on that front.
Of course, yeah.
We'll see. But yeah, it's not like Derek Carr's going somewhere that has, you know, 5 can't-miss targets around him, and all of a sudden we're saying just by the supporting cast is going to be in the best spot of his career.
Were you surprised?
No, because the other two, so the two other teams were courting him, Carolina and the Jets. With the Jets, I think their eyes were A, fixated on Aaron Rodgers, and B, if you're Derek Carr, who's won zero playoff games as a starter, and you want to go and you want to win a playoff game this year, which path has less resistance?
NFC South.
Playing in the division that has Kyle Trask and P.J. Walker as starting quarterbacks right now with Desmond Ridder, or the division that has Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. You know, guys that have each, I guess Tua hasn't been to the playoffs as a starter, but you know, Josh Allen's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Mac Jones already been to the playoffs once. Tua was playing amazing football last year. Like, I think I'd rather go to the NFC South and feel, and by the way, the NFC as a whole, like, who's the, if Aaron Rodgers gets traded, who's the best quarterback not named Jalen Hurts in the NFC?
In the NFC? Oh, man. Not
say Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff.
I mean, I'm trying him to unblock
Dak Prescott,
me.
So probably is the answer.
Well, it's Sarah Carr. I mean, I want him to unblock me, so I'm going to go Derek Carr for sure.
It's probably Dak, right?
It probably
it's
is probably Dak. Yeah.
Dak also tied for the league lead in interceptions last year, right? So, like, meanwhile, in the AFC, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Herbert, Lamar Jackson, right? Like, it's a ridiculous list in that conference, and that's based off guys that played well last year. What if, you know, Trevor Lawrence on the come up? What if Deshaun Watson looks like himself this year? Like, it's just a whole, the chemical imbalance of the NFL right now is real.
I love being an NFC fan.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. Derek Carr, you feel like you have a chance every week.
Yeah, Lions.
Justin Fields, obviously.
I know. And San Francisco, we don't know.
Lions going to be the divisional favorite next year, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Minnesota
right
has now, some cap issues. Yeah. They're moving some personnel. Eric Kendrick's gone. Oh. So I think your Lions on the upswing.
We're going to talk tight ends in just a little bit. Let's wrap up with some combine thoughts. And I'll start there. Were you the combine? We didn't cross paths, but.
I know, because I was in the background doing my work. But yeah, I was there for working. I was there for 5 days.
Okay. You were.
No, Field was probably much more in front of a camera somewhere.
Just, you know, I lost my voice by the end of it. I'll leave it at that. But I'll just, you know, a couple of things that stood out from the combine that might have, like, fantasy relevance is real chance that Bijan Robinson has the best case for instant fantasy impact since Saquon Barkley, which we kind of knew that one. He's spectacular. He's, and we can debate the merits of using a first round pick in the real NFL draft. Mm-hmm. On a running back, but if he goes in the top 15 picks, it's probably to a team that really needs running back help, and he would be an absolute legend.
Yeah,
coming out of the gates here,
no doubt about it. He'll likely be an RB1 in season long.
He gets drafted
right now. Like, if you were doing your rookie draft right now, you're picking him first overall, and it's not even debatable. I mean, I think if you're in super flex, maybe you're thinking about it for a second, but you're still probably taking him number one.
So, amazing.
And that, you know, we'll get more into this as the offseason goes on, but running backs that are picked in the first round over the past decade or so are feature backs, and they're really good from a fantasy perspective right out of the gate. So there's no doubt he'll go somewhere and be a feature back right away, and there'll be a lot of hype that goes along with that.
There is not a wide receiver, though, that I'm saying right now, I can absolutely guarantee you, is going to be a, you know, fantasy rock star as a rookie. Mm-hmm. Not because there aren't good players, but there are good players, but there's no Ja'Marr Chase, there's no Justin Jefferson coming out. I just have no idea how they're going to be ordered, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a compelling case for Jackson Smith and Jigba of Ohio State as the best receiver. Or, say, Flowers or Quentin Johnston. There are a bunch of good receivers. I don't think there's that special can't-miss talent that we say, all right, you know what? The first team that really needs wide receiver help, put it in Penn. That's where that player is going to. So, wide receiver classes, you're going to be very, very – I think it's going to be a more pedestrian group than recent years. But the most important position in football and the most compelling one in this year's draft class by far is the quarterback spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And out of the four that are going to go in the first round that we think is certain, we have C.J. Stroud from Ohio State, Bryce Young from Alabama, Will Levis from Kentucky, also from nearby Middletown, Connecticut, and, of course, Anthony Richardson from Florida. There's no doubt which one of those guys has the highest fantasy ceiling. It's Anthony Richardson, who is...
I mean...
But the key word is ceiling there.
Yeah. Ceiling, yes.
We'll explain why.
Yes, we will. He absolutely shredded the combine. It was a historic performance. 4.4340 at 244 pounds.
I mean, that's unbelievable. Like Cam Newton size. Yeah, no, he's by comparison. Like, he's a big
Cam Newton, Josh Allen level athlete at that size. But Mike, this guy probably needs at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
And college football fans, I have had this conversation 50 times in the past month and a half since the regular season ended. My college football fan buddies who are like, I watched that guy at Florida, and he was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You really expect him to go in the first round of the NFL draft? You juxtapose that with the people that have seen the singular traits and his best of plays, and they're like, how could you possibly not take this guy in the first round? It's a very fascinating evaluation.
And those people that have watched him and saw some of his struggles, only they didn't see him much. He has 13 career starts, 13, right? So he is the definition of raw.
Stuff.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So his collegiate efficiency as a passer is atrocious, but we've seen that from guys that just get better in the pros. And I think, again, you're going to hear this comp a lot. The easy comp is Josh Allen in that regard, right? His collegiate efficiency, off target rates, interceptions, just completion percentage, they were terrible. And he kind of owned that when he came into the NFL and he worked on his footwork. And he obviously, look what he is today. So, Richardson obviously has a massive ceiling. He's going to do a ton with his legs no matter what. So he has a high floor from a fantasy perspective. And if he just becomes an average NFL passer, he's going to be a fantasy superstar. I mean, there's no question about it. You could easily make the case that he is QB1 from a dynasty rookie point of view.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of if you buy into him improving as a passer in the NFL. Because obviously, if he doesn't, and he's an inaccurate thrower,
right,
he's not going to last. So it's just, you have to make that decision when you're on the clock.
There's a part of me that feels, you talk about Josh Allen being the upside, right? Like the ceiling of what his comp could be. Is Jamarcus Russell the other side of it, where it's like he just lit the combine on fire and like there's not a whole lot to be able, like Jamarcus Russell was literally that physical like specimen that can just do everything, and it made everyone be like, no, we can look over all the rest of it because of these traits. We can help teach that. And like, is that the other side of it?
So the reason why for fantasy Richardson has a much higher floor than Russell is like Jamarcus Russell was like 6'6",
he was
255,
huge. Yeah.
He 260 pounds.
He wasn't nimble Richardson.
But he looked like, you go back to some of the big quarterbacks in recent vintage, right? I mean, Ryan Leaf was famously one of them. Drew Bledsoe, massive 6'6" frame, right? Like some of these guys that were just absolute, you know, they were like Greek gods back there.
But so he's not quite as big of a guy, more quickness, more all of that.
Yeah,
kind of stuff.
He's more athletically. He's athletic. Much closer to. I hate when we compare guys to elite players, in some ways, but athletically, he is in the conversation with Cam Newton. Cam Newton, though, like, I see the comps. You know, he's a better passer than Cam Newton. Or I'm like, Cam Newton had like maybe the single greatest college football season ever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, go back and he dragged Auburn. They're Auburn. They've got some players. He dragged an okay Auburn team to an undefeated national championship. Mm-hmm. Like, Cam has made himself an easy target in some ways, and is obviously his career did not end in the most spectacular fashion. But that dude was absolutely, I mean, there's not even a word for him at the peak of both his college and pro career. But Richardson, you know, if you told me right now to peg where he goes, you could tell me he goes 29, and you could tell me he goes 9th. You could tell me he goes 3rd, and I would believe all three.
You think there's a chance he goes first overall? Do you think someone?
I do not think so.
I don't think so either. But you know, I've heard the.
I do not think so.
I think there's a bigger chance he goes first overall than 29th, though. I think enough teams would be mesmerized by that talent in the middle of the draft.
I would think 29 is more likely than 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, here's the problem. Again, I've talked to people that have, and not just the college football fans who are like, "Have you watched him?" But people who've studied him are just like, "Dude, how much time do you think I have to wait around here?" Right?
That's
like,
what I was
get
just
fired
gonna
every
say.
2 years.
The people who have those, but a lot of people who have those first round picks are looking for something that's going to make a difference right now. And if you're buying into Anthony Richardson as somebody that you're going to mold into the quarterback that you want, you may not have the patience or the draft capital to expend a number one pick.
It totally screams Detroit or Seattle with one of their picks, because both of them have a very solid veteran in place. They also, like Pete Carroll.
Pete Carroll would love.
Oh,
this
love
is a perfect
this, right?
Pete Carroll pick.
Richardson and DK Metcalf out there together.
And
then Detroit too, right? Yeah. Like, you know, you've got Jared Goff obviously there, but financially there are sort of outs from Jared Goff's deal after this year. And then beyond that, you're a coach that's got some cachet now, right? Mm-hmm. Dan Campbell, they're not going to fire Dan Campbell next season.
No.
I can't imagine, right?
So
They've got the chance to wait. And while we always talk about these quarterbacks and having to wait like a full year on them, you could kind of thread the needle a little bit with Anthony Richardson. He could provide sort of like what Lamar Jackson did until he became a starter in his rookie year, where it was like before he became the starter, they'd play him like 10, 15 snaps a game, right? Like Anthony Richardson, he could be your goal line package specialist. He
think
could
about
be
Ben your, Johnson using Anthony Richardson totally. With that Lions
even
offense.
Even some of the stuff like, you know, like sometimes Browns fans got disappointed by it, right? But like, even when Deshaun Watson was playing, they had a few snaps a game for Jacoby Brissett, fourth, you know, short yardage stuff. Like, Jalen Hurts is a rookie, right? Like, there are some really intriguing ways that you can utilize a guy who, even if he's not ready to be a full-time starter, could, the second he steps on the field, be the best athlete.
Yeah, I wonder if, I mean, the Eagles, Jalen Hurts quarterback sneak play could be made illegal at some point, but if it's not, that'd be a good fit for sure, to him to check it.
Eagles might just draft him just for that, right?
It's very interesting. I would just say, I think for fantasy purposes, going back to that, just his running ability. You know, we talk about there's more quarterbacks who are mobile now than not, because I think it's being sought after as a trait to be multidimensional. But you got to watch him run. And if you watch him run and his ability to throw on the run, and granted, he's a work in progress, but he has had some amazing escapes. If you go back and watch some of the plays that he made, some of his best plays were when he was on the move. And if I'm a team, I'm looking at that. There's definitely coach up potential there. I also found this stat interesting from our SIG posting this morning, Stats and Information Group. Highest career yards per rush, excluding sacks, in the FBS since 2014. He ranks fourth overall, right behind Lamar Jackson.
How about that?
So, you know, he is that guy, and he could be very exciting for fantasy in a dynasty league. Trust me, as somebody who needs to rebuild their roster entirely, I'm looking at him.
That's a college football quirk, by the way. People probably don't know that. Yeah. A quarterback loses rushing yards for sack yardage.
Yep.
So if you have, you take three sacks for 21 yards over the course of the game, but you also rush for 50 yards, the box score says you ran for 29. Mm-hmm. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That is weird.
So I pull all the sack numbers out. Like, I already wrote 111 capsules for all of the players who are at the combine.
Of course you did. And while you were winning your boxing.
During bowling, I was writing these. But I remove all of the sack numbers, so we actually have an idea what they're actually bringing to the table.
That's why Mike Clay is the best. And if that guy, I mean, this is why people... His Such projections are so accurate, because he thinks of all this.
He's the best. They're ready to go. So they're filed, and they'll be up on the site soon. By the way, we mentioned the other three positions, right? So we're probably looking at like four wide receivers in the first round, probably one running back, four quarterbacks for sure. And the tight end could have four as well. They got three or four tight ends. I mean, this is a really good tight end class and could shake up fantasy in the next couple of years.
But it's different in the sense, like, there's not anything close to a Kyle Pitts. There are guys who are in the top 15 or so, but there's no, like, Michael Mayer from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Luke Musgrave from Oregon State, Dalton Kincaid from Utah are all good players. None of them, though, like, you know, top five percentile for their athletic, you know, profile of the position.
So you're saying they will be good then in fantasy, unlike Kyle Pitts? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah,
that's a good point.
We're going to talk about him shortly.
Let's breeze right to it, shall we?
Can I tell one real quick story, Fields Yates? Yeah, I want to wait for this. The last couple of days, I feel like I've been away from you guys for forever, but it really hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
I went out with my buddies, Emery, on tour Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I flew out to Columbus to meet up with them and just to do some stuff.
Look at you.
It was a ton of fun. It was great. And while I was in, we were in Philadelphia, we played... They played an Irish Cultural Center, and I had set up and was doing merch for them or anything like that. And this guy, happened a couple times, but this guy came in and I told him like where everything was at and as I was doing. And he was like, "You look familiar. Do I know you from something?" And I was like, the thing is just like, "Do you play fantasy football?" It's just like the question. And he was like, "Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're that from ESPN, right? Oh my gosh." And I forget his name. I feel bad. He was like, "My name is Mark." He was, "You're Kyle, right?" And I was like, "Nope."
He's thirsty, Kyle.
Talk about getting knocked down a peg, where you get recognized for a second, and then you realize, "Wow, Kyle! Kyle is definitely big in the Philadelphia area." I want to say that right now. So Kyle getting a lot of love in Philadelphia.
I'm sure he gets confused for Daniel all the time. Like, you're Daniel.
I was like,
Bob,
"No,
right?
my name's
squirrel.
Daniel," and I was like, "Kyle's our researcher. He's awesome. Like, he's obviously incredible." He's like,
and
"Oh yeah,"
and he was like, "Oh yeah, yeah." I meant Daniel.
Yeah. But I just thought it was great that, like, you couldn't find... Kyle and I share, like, one thing in common. We're both, like, really pale. And other than that, like, we're basically different people all the way across. Our Venn diagrams are quite small. So it's just really cute to be able to really think that Kyle gets some love in Philadelphia. I would love... If at least it was Kyle and not somebody else from this podcast. Former member of this podcast.
Luckily, I have not been mistaken for any of you.
That's good.
Unluckily for us, we have not been mistaken.
I do.
It's
funny though, when I'm in an airport, like I was out on assignment in Charlotte, just flew back yesterday, I think, or the day before, I can't remember. But I was coming through the airport and talking to my producer, and I couldn't have looked more a slob, right? You know,
please,
not possible.
Already alive.
And this guy walks by and he goes, "Starfania," and I'm like, "Oh no,
dang it,
like, shoot." I was like, and I kind of did that. eye roll, and I didn't mean it like an eye roll to him. No. I meant like, oh.
Oh, he's never listened to the pod again.
No, she
was,
yeah.
Like, was mean to
I'm
me.
I'm a huge fan of the podcast. And we appreciate all of you out there who listen.
Oh, man, so much.
There's that section in People magazine at the front of it where it's like called like Star Tracks, maybe, where it shows celebrities like out and about.
Celebs are just like us.
Right. And it always cracks me up, right?
It's
like Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez out in Los Angeles on an 87-degree day. And then you see them walking together, and it's like Ben Affleck has like a trench coat, mm-hmm. like a Kangol hat pulled mm-hmm. all the way down his face, sunglasses, like, you know, like UGG boots on. And J-Lo, you can see like, you know, one square inch of their body. And it's like, yeah, there's like some photographer was like, oh J-Lo
that's
and
them.
Ben totally get it, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's so funny.
Oh, man. We're not like celebrities, I guess.
No. It's cool, though, being able to just to have people come up and be like, hey, we listen to the podcast.
We
like being able
it.
To meet
course,
anybody
yeah.
that lets us into their lives for any amount of time. We don't take that for granted. That's a huge totally. Honor. So super awesome to meet people.
We mentioned there's a strong tight end class in the draft. Let's talk a little bit of veteran tight ends. And we're going to do our five at the top. And I'm mm-hmm. not going to waste too much time with number one. It's Travis Kelce for... if you don't know why Travis Kelce is the best
for all the
fantasy,
reasons,
because he hosted Saturday Night Live.
This is your first time on the show, apparently. You've never played fantasy football before, and if that's the case, by the way, welcome. We love having you here. I will just ask this, and Stefan, you get the honors of answering this. How high are you? Would you take Travis Kelce this year?
We were talking before the pod, and I was saying, wasn't I one of the people who said at the end that I'm trading up for Travis Kelce? That was my lesson learned from this season, because I got
business.
So hurt by the tight end position in redraft leagues, in dynasty league for sure. Thank you, Kyle Pitts. So I was like, Travis Kelce is worth the price of admission to me. Now, that being said, it still depends on where I would draft in the first round, but I would be willing to pay first round draft capital for Travis Kelce, because I think when you look at total points scored, he's that much of a difference maker. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but oh yeah, thank you, Thirsty Kyle, speaking of, scored 100.9 mm-hmm. more points than any other tight end. And what that means to me, sometimes we look at point differentials and they're like 20 or 30 points, and a lot of that could have come in just a couple of games.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce could win you the week any single week, and that right there is my rationale. That, and he still scores touchdowns. Maybe not as many this year, but still scores touchdowns.
If there was any player at any position that scored, that was number one and scored 100 more points than number two, like, how do you justify the idea of Travis Kelce being that much better than everybody else? It feels like it has to propel him into that.
But
first
we have seen that. We've seen that with running backs like Christian McCaffrey. We've seen
They're
it with Cooper
backs.
Kupp at wide receiver. I'm just saying, my point being that those guys in next year come back to earth to some extent, right? So are you
Travis
buying
Kelce
at the peak? Are you going
to
buy him at his peak in a draft and take him with the top five pick? Or are you going to say, all right, you know, he's probably really worth, he's going to come back to earth to some extent. He's 34 now. He's coming off essentially a career year. And look, he's been a top two tight end seven straight years. I'm not saying he's going to plummet, right? But he, you know, he gave you top five value last year. Does that mean he's going to do it this year?
Maybe.
He'll be top 15 player. So
yeah,
I don't know what if I take him top five.
We will also see how the Chiefs offseason unfolds, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many receivers do they retain from their free agents? How many do they add, if any? Do they draft any?
There's
also
something.
Noting,
if
though,
you, like, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt, but if you listen, there was an ESPN Daily podcast. Shout out to the ESPN Daily pod, which is so phenomenal. You all should subscribe to it, in addition to ours. And they were talking about Travis Kelce and sort of his history, the evolution of Travis Kelce going from, you know, how he converted from quarterback in college, sort of his learning, you know, he almost didn't get to play. And then his connection with Patrick Mahomes. And sort of he had that when he was a college player with his quarterback. And just because he understands the quarterback position, their ability to communicate, like there's a connection there that is so important for Patrick Mahomes that I don't think that's not going to change, right? And so he always becomes a safety valve, an outlet receiver for him, in addition to being this big physical presence. And the play scripting from Andy Reid somehow always helps Travis Kelce to get open as well. So I think when I look at those things, they're not changing. And so much of his value comes in the red zone. I don't need him to put up tons of yards after the catch like some of the other tight ends.
But he still will. We don't have to labor it too much more with Travis Kelce. He rules. Let's go to number two here on the list, Mark Andrews, Daniel. And Mike was talking about how you could be buying Travis Kelce at the peak. You could be buying Mark Andrews at the crater next year because he was, in the second half of the season, bad. Really bad.
And it didn't feel, you got to a point with Mark Andrews where you were starting him because he was Mark Andrews, not because you wanted to start him, right? And that doesn't feel good. So heading into this year, I want to know an offseason where Lamar Jackson comes back and things feel good within this Ravens organization, because he's still got to have somebody throwing him the football.
I was going to say, when Lamar Jackson was out, it cratered Mark Andrews. His fantasy value. So that is important.
He had a 29% target share in both situations, in both splits, with Lamar and without. And he fell from second in fantasy points per game to 17th without. So a huge difference in those five games without Lamar. He wasn't fully healthy. He missed some time in there as well. But look, he's been top five in points per game four straight seasons. He's set, 6 years younger than Travis Kelce. He's one of the best players in the league. As long as they have a good quarterback, it's probably going to be Lamar Jackson. We're going to feel good about him. He'll still be a top two fantasy tight end.
And Mike, it's tricky from there and on out, because George Kittle is an amazing player. I think just in terms of like overall ability, the only player that can be mentioned in the same breath as Travis Kelce or George Kittle. But a lot of that value is not just catching passes. It's doing things like blocking and the dirty work. That being said, Mike, he had 11 touchdowns last year. You buying that George Kittle can have a prominent role with whoever is quarterback next year?
I'm not sure, because I did look at the 9 full games with the big four. Yep. And you know, it was Kittle, of course. Christian McCaffrey was there. Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. His target share fell all the way to 16%. That's 4.2 targets per game. That is not enough. He averaged a little over 10 fantasy points per game. That would have been tight end 8 for the season. So I'm a little nervous about ranking him this high. He is in his past, he has been a little bit volatile. And the touchdown rate that he had last year, his touchdown rate, 11 touchdowns to your point, which is about double his expected touchdown total. His touchdown rate was triple his previous career touchdown rate. That tells me, red flag, the touchdown's probably coming down next season, especially with all these other skill guys around him. He did a lot of his damage when someone was injured, like Deebo was out or Christian McCaffrey wasn't there. And I don't know if we need to worry about durability at all, Stefania, but he has only played one full season. That was 2018.
Yeah, I think his physical play contributes to that. George Kittle goes 110% if you've ever watched him. And
sure does.
I think that you know, his willingness to absorb the hits and the way he blocks is part of why they love him and why he's at for the risk.
Yeah, I'm kind of have to close your eyes once you get past Travis Kelce and just start the guy. Right? Like, you don't have a choice.
I actually would have had TJ Hockenson above George Kittle.
Yeah, I could buy that.
They're both right there, 3 and 4 for me.
Four. Okay, so tell me, make your case for me.
Part of the reason for me is understanding the floor that it felt like he gave to those Vikings, right? 60 catches in his 10 games with Minnesota. So he's averaging 6 catches a game, just 8.6 yards per catch, though. Okay, so you're talking about 50 receiving yards, 6 catches a game without getting in the end zone. So he's giving you a floor, give or take-ish, of 11 fantasy points at the tight end position before you get any touchdowns added into that conversation. I think that, like, he really added that. I understand it is a more of a dump-off play, but 11 fantasy points as what feels like the floor for TJ Hockenson, I love that.
Yeah, I think I will end up with him third. I was doing a little work last night kind of prepping for this. Check this out, the stat. In 47 games with the Lions, he had 7 games with double-digit targets. With the Vikings, he played 10 full games. He had 5 of them.
Wow.
They were featuring him. His target share went way up. He was averaging almost 10 targets a game in this offense. And I'll be surprised at this point if Adam Thielen is on that team. We'll see how they address that spot. KJ Osborne could potentially play a larger role.
Lifesaver.
Shout out to KJ Osborne.
Yeah, for sure. And they may draft someone. We'll see. But there's a path here for Hockenson to have a big offensive role, even with Justin Jefferson there. And we know that offense will be pretty good. Kirk Cousins, at the very minimum, gets the ball to the playmakers, right? Yep. He's done that for Jefferson. He did it for Hockenson last year. He's done it for Adam Thielen. So feeling optimistic about Hockenson for next season.
And news from Adam Schefter a couple hours ago that Adam Thielen's, and you were alluding to this, Mike, but Adam Thielen's future in Minnesota is very much on shaky ground. Sounds like he'll be playing elsewhere next season. He's 32 now, had 706 yards last year. I'll mention the last one here, Dallas Goedert. I think you could make a case for a handful of other guys here. You could make the case for Evan Ingram. You could make the case for Kyle Pitts, Darren Waller bounce back.
Dalton Schultz.
We'll see where he lands.
Yeah, where he ends up. Yeah.
A lot of players that I think fit into that number five conversation. I say the upside for Dallas Goedert as he plays in an offense that, A, is super aggressive, throws the ball all over the yard. The downside is that he's got two alpha wide receivers on the roster, probably never going to be as likely to be the team's leading receiver as Kelce and Andrews certainly would be. And you know, even Hockenson has a real chance to be the number two pass catcher every single year for Minnesota for as long as he's there.
And Dalton Schultz is interesting to me because he's a free agent.
Yep.
And I am really curious to see where he lands, because he, to me, is one of the best tight ends out there. And
look great in Carolina.
Although he struggled with the PCL sprain kind of midseason, and his numbers for this season weren't as large as expected, he finished really strong, looked great in the playoffs. So I like Dalton Schultz, depending on where he lands.
Okay, so that is our tight end talk for the day. We are going to be back at some point next week. It's free agency. We're still figuring out our plans. Like, be patient with us. There's a reason why the podcast automatically uploads to your feed, because you might get more than you expect next week. You might get exactly what you expect next week. We shall see.
You know what you can do in the meantime? You can go and check out what I thought was a really, oh, this is nothing from you guys, a really incredible piece from Calvin Ridley. He wrote a lot of people have talked about it. I know Mike has shared online. Yeah. If you haven't read it, just him going in and talking about some of the mental health issues that he dealt with last year and some of the stuff. It was unbelievable piece. So just something to check out if you haven't read it. Made me an unbelievably huge Calvin Ridley fan.
Me too. And I feel more optimistic about him from a fantasy perspective. Him explaining why he had some of those struggles, the injury issues, and now he's a full go and ready to go.
I think he's a great fit in Jacksonville.
What'd he say? 1,400 plus yards every season. That's what I'm not going to project him that high, but I'm feeling better.
I'm feeling pretty close. Fun times right now in Duval, and amen. What a wonderful story. On the Players Tribune from Calvin Ridley, who I did not realize that he came up through about as arduous of circumstances as you could. So mad respect to him. We are going to be back again at some point to be determined, but it'll be in the podcast feed wherever you get your podcast. Make sure that you download. And if you want to, you can rate. That would be great. You can certainly subscribe to the podcast as well. He's Daniel. She's Star Fania. He's Mike Clay. I'm Phil. Talk to you guys next week.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady out there hustling for us. Advice that we really trust. Bay Area lady, always there to help. She's not a cone, she's your favorite gal. She's Stefania Bell.